Proudly welcomes you to Soundbites. This is America's longest running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Hello.
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 Hello. Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 10th of September, Anno Domini 2006, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dan Deary.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, you'll notice that Dave Enright is not with us today. Dan Deary is in his place. Dave is, I don't know what he's doing, sitting on his motorcycle, soaking up the sunshine.
Why don't you say that he's home doing the same things he told everybody I was doing a couple of weeks ago?
Because Dave doesn't cry, he's a man.
Although when that fly and bugs go slamming into your face at 60 miles an hour.
That's exactly right. Yeah. You just might tear up a little bit. Exactly. I'm pretty sure he wears a helmet with a shield on it. Speaking of shield, what a great segue. Microsoft Research has built something called Browser Shield. It's a prototype framework that promises to allow Internet Explorer to intercept and remove on the fly malicious code hidden in web pages instead of showing users. Instead, it will show users safe equivalents of those pages. It could one day even become Microsoft's answer to zero-day browser exploits such as the WMF attack that spread like wildfire in December of 2005. It's a tool for deleting embedded scripts before a web page is displayed in a browser. It can inspect and clean both static and dynamic content. It could provide a safety net protecting many web servers from themselves. If the prototype is eventually folded into a Microsoft product, it could also protect against drive-by attack that target flaws in IE. Here's the interesting part of that problem. How do they differentiate between a malicious script and a good script?
One written by Microsoft and one not written by Microsoft.
Well, exactly. I suppose you could do it. I suppose you could do it by checking as to what that script is trying to do. But sometimes scripts that you want to run will go deep into the system somewhere, like if you're installing software that you actually want. So I don't know how they're going to be able to tell, but I suspect that it will make for much hilarity as time goes on.
Yeah, or if they're comparing it to a database that they've created and of known scripts that could be bad.
That are good or bad, and you have to pay Microsoft to get your good script on their list.
Exactly, that's the way that works, I'm sure. Well, we'll follow that as we keep going along. I'm sure we'll see that, particularly when it comes to IE7, when that comes out shortly. Let's go to the phones, shall we? Did I catch you unawares, Rob? Never. We never catch Rob unawares. Our first caller is Ian from Adams Basin. Welcome, Ian. What's your question?
Hi.
Wait, Ian, where's Adams Basin?
It's in between Spongeport and Rockport.
Ah.
Other side of town from Bushnell's Basin. I guess Adams and Bushnell didn't talk to each other.
Apparently not, no.
Okay, I have a Dell laptop, and when I shut it down, it's Windows XP on it. When I shut it down, it just sits on the Windows is shutting down screen, and I eventually just have to press the power button because it won't shut down.
There's some program behind that screen probably asking you a question. Some program isn't shutting down, so Windows can't complete the shutdown. And the trick is finding out what that program is.
Okay. So I just have to make sure all my programs are closed then?
Well, it's probably not any of your programs. It's one of the dozens of STR or TSRs, Terminate and Stay Ready tasks, things running in your system tray, things running behind the scenes. And it's that makes it especially difficult to track down. What you can try doing is going to msconfig, go to start, run, and then type msconfig. There's a startup items tab there, and that will let you go through all your startup items, turn them on and off one or two at a time until you find which one is preventing it from shutting down.
Okay.
Unfortunately, there is no easier way to do that.
Okay.
I wish there were.
All right, well, thanks a lot.
Thanks. All right. Oh, I see. Our next caller is Steve from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
My question involves Windows XP. Lately, when I've been trying to shut down, I get an XP com trying to end.
Okay.
Have you ever...
is that XP.com or XPCOM all as one word?
Yes.
Which?
One word.
Okay. And that prevents it from shutting down, is what you're saying?
Right. It still shut down after about a minute, but the dialog box comes on saying program is not responding.
Do you have Firefox or any Mozilla products installed?
That's what I run. Yes, Firefox.
Firefox. Try uninstalling it, uninstalling Firefox and reinstalling it. Some of the XPCOM components are built into Mozilla products. And by uninstalling it and reinstalling it, you may fix the components. If you close out of Firefox, it might not be closing out of the XPCOM components correctly.
Okay. I did that a couple of weeks ago and eliminated the problem, and it has come back.
It came back then?
Yes.
Yeah, it's likely something. Well, it's not shutting down. It just hesitates for a bit while whatever that XPCOM component is shuts down, right?
Right.
Yeah. The only thing that I can suggest, as Dan suggested, is once you've reinstalled it and you realize that's where your problem is, it's got to be somewhere you went and something you loaded that's causing that problem. And I don't, that's going to take a little research to figure out. But at, you know, as a simple thing, again, you can, uninstall it and reinstall it. That'll get rid of whatever that piece was. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dan Deary, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Unlock at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dan Deary.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 19 minutes after the hour, it is 57 degrees under fluffy skies in Rochester, New York. You are listening to Soundbites. I just did the weather for Rob. I know how much he loves to hear me do the weather, so I did it just for him. Intel. Looks like it's bad news for Intel. They're laying off 10% of their workforce. On September 5th, they announced that they'll be laying off about 10% of their workforce following the conclusion of a sweeping internal review. They'll cut 10,500 jobs by the middle of 2007. The layoffs are a significant part of a restructuring that Intel said will save the company $2 billion, that's with a B, in 2007 and $3 billion in 2008. The headcount should drop to about 95,000 people. These actions are apparently essential to Intel becoming a more agile and efficient company, not just for this year or the next, but for years to come, said the president and CEO of Intel. This is a time of very intense competition for Intel.
Reading between the lines, yep.
Exactly. Advanced Micro Devices, AMD, which is Intel's main rival, has grown stronger over the last few years, has gained market share at Intel's expense, particularly in marketing x86 servers. Overall, Intel's market share fell to just short of 73% for the second quarter of 2006. That's versus 82.2% in the second quarter of 2005. So, as you can see, they've dropped almost 10% in the last year, and that scared them. I have to admit, I've always been a huge fan of AMD processors. I have AMDs in my brand new Enright PC, my 64-bit Enright PC, and they just work flawlessly every day. I'm very impressed. Very nifty product.
So I can see that Intel, smaller company being more agile, more easy to shift their marketing and right. Manufacturing.
Right now, Apple just went with Intel. They've got the dual core or the core duo,
the core two duo now in their new machines, up to 24-inch monitor on a prosumer machine. Which is interesting. The 24-inch iMac is $1,999. The original 15-inch iMac was something like $2,500.
Yeah, right.
you can barely buy a monitor that big anymore.
Right. In terms of the processor, they decided to go with Intel for whatever reason. You're finding Dell now, who used to be all Intel, is about 50-50 Intel and AMD. AMD does seem to be cornering the server market in particular, and that's the way in. You know, once you see how good those processors are in your servers, you start buying for the desktop. So I can see that Intel's getting a little worried. We'll keep you up on that news as it continues on. Our next caller is Roger on a cell phone. Roger, tell me you're pulled over to the side of the road.
No, actually, hello?
Yes?
Yep.
Oh, I'm sorry. Actually, I'm in the Home Depot parking lot.
Oh, that's okay then.
There you go.
All right. Hey, I got my HP, I don't know, I upgraded it to a XP Home.
And right.
Right now it is, everything freezes, even though I can move my mouse. And then the screen goes blank, and then it comes back all in a matter of about 4 seconds. The golf course will be lit
with revolutionary glowing. So it boots up, the screen goes blank, and then things reappear?
Yes.
And are you able to use it after things reappear, or is it frozen
yes.
then?
It's normal afterwards.
Now, how often does this happen?
About once every minute.
Really?
Faster, yeah. Try to write something on Word, and it's terrible. Takes you 2 minutes to write one sentence.
I can see where that could be a problem. And this happens no matter what applications you're running?
That's correct.
Video driver?
Yeah. That's what I was just going to say. Try updating the video driver for it. That could be causing that problem.
That sounds like a winner.
Is this a desktop or a laptop?
It's a desktop.
Okay.
Yeah, one of the problems that often happens with XP is it doesn't know what your driver is, and it gets generic driver, which particularly in HP, when they have all their specialized thises and thats, it can cause a problem. So let me suggest what Dan said. You should probably go to your HP site and find your specific driver for XP.
Okay.
And install it and see what happens. Let us know.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, we'll Roger. Our next caller is Ingrid from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Ingrid. What's your question?
Hi. I have a Dell desktop Dimension.
Yep.
And it does not want to boot up. I turn it on, and the XP screen comes on, and it just runs. It just sits there. I am unable to turn it off. I have to pull the power, you know. That's
right.
The only way I can turn it off. So I spent about an hour and a half with the Dell technician on the phone. She had me unplug everything in the back. We also did go into run msconfig, you know, disable everything in the startup, and then keep turning it on, keep turning it off, and then plugging in one thing at a time. And it seemed to work for about a week or so. And now it does the same thing. I turn it on, and the screen just scans Windows XP and just sits there.
So you're able to get, did they have you go into safe mode to turn off, to uncheck the things in MSConfig?
No, she did not. I had done that before. I had gone into safe mode before and saved as much as I could because I had problems before. I would get this blue screen all of a sudden, and it says beginning dump of physical memory and physical memory, you know, dump complete. And then I got all these error messages, BC code and BCP1, BCP2, all these number codes.
Okay. It sounds like if you can get into safe mode and it's not booting into normal mode, it's more than likely a device driver conflict probably that's trying to start up. And something like that, that's kind of hard to diagnose for just a regular computer user.
Uh-huh.
If you were to bring that into a shop or something, they'd be able to...
Are you still under warranty?
No, it's about 3 years old.
Then let me suggest you bring it to a local reputable vendor and have them check it out. It could be, as Dan says, it could be a device driver. It could also be a virus, but it's less likely to be a virus and more likely to be a device driver.
I mean, I have a Linksy router, plus I have, you know, another firewall.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't think it's a virus.
Well, yeah, viruses can come in a lot of ways. You got to make sure your antivirus is up to date, your spyware programs are running.
Right, I run that all the time.
Okay, then it's likely to be a device driver or a hardware problem, and that can really only be diagnosed by a vendor.
Okay, so you don't think uninstalling Windows and reinstalling it would do it?
Well, you can't uninstall Windows. You can try reinstalling Windows over Windows and see if that fixes the problem.
But it may not. I would suggest bringing it in. Give the folks at Enright PC a call, 442-4843. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes, we have Dan Deary sitting in for Dave Enright, who's not at home crying like a baby under the bed. We have Steve Ray, who had to get up early this morning, and that left him crying like a baby, but not under the bed. We have Rob Linton, who never cries under anybody's bed, ever, like a baby or anything else. And me, Nick Francesco. And you are listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe. Rob is shaking his head in there. I don't know what he thinks he's doing. Listen, we're going to be back in just a couple of minutes. So if you're not on the line, why not? And if you are, hang on. Back in just a couple of minutes on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Hi, this is Brad.
Computer talk that you can understand. Now back to Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dan Deary.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. And you know what? I have to announce this. I don't care what anybody says. IBM is having an anniversary today. It's 50 years of the hard drive.
Wow.
Is this month, 50 years ago this month. And I will say that I am older than the hard drive. Today is my birthday.
Happy birthday to Nick.
Yeah,
thank you.
Birthday.
And I am 54 years old. Hey. Hey. Could this be any slower?
Sing. I don't know.
This Pick is like the 2 a.m.
The problem is at your age, you are slow. You know what I'm saying?
Slow,
so
what?
I figured it might be appropriate.
Thank you very much. Yep, 54 years old today. I mean, actually not like this week or whatever, but today. I don't think we're going to actually hit either of you guys.
Mine's on a Monday.
Yeah, Dave and Steve are both this month, but you're the 19th.
Yeah.
And Dave's the 20th, so his will be Tuesday. So we're missing both you guys. We actually hit me today. It is my birthday today. But it is the it is also the anniversary this month. They don't give an exact date. It's the anniversary this month of the of the hard drive. 50 years ago this month, IBM built the first hard drive, the 350 disk storage unit. It was introduced on September 4th. The disk storage unit was introduced on September 4th. Nice. Okay, so
what
it is
was
September
the capacity 4th. And price?
It had 50 24-inch platters. I'm looking to see if they actually give
I found one here. $10,000 per megabyte.
Oh, that's it?
Is that all? Per megabyte.
Per megabyte.
Yeah. So you can have you could put in as many platters as you felt you needed.
Here says 50-foot diameter disks, 2,000 bits per square inch, and now we're at millions of bits per square inch.
50 feet?
Oh, 52-foot diameter disks.
Oh, yeah, they're 2-foot diameter, right.
Yeah, so 24-inch. So and I've got in my museum at home one of the first hard drives for personal computers, the 5-megabyte Apple Profile for the Apple III that came out.
Sure.
And that was only $5,000 per meg.
Right.
So in the 20 years from 56 to the mid-70s, Apple got the price down by half.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. What?
I say $5,000 per meg, and now in 30 years, we're at $1,000 per terabyte. So what is that, 10 cents a meg?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we've come a little ways anyway in the last 50 years. Our next caller, Mary from Shalott, New York. Welcome, Mary. What's your question?
Well, I just wanted to say happy birthday to you.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for the terrific job you did hosting with Beth all week.
Well, it was my pleasure, Mary. Thank you.
You were charming, even though we were doing double duty with your regular job.
Yes, I was.
So I just wanted to thank you and say we really appreciated you.
Well, aren't you a sweetheart? Thank you, Mary.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yes, I did. I was honored to be asked by the management here at WHAM, the incredibly perspicacious people here at WHAM. Last week, the great Mike DiGiorgio was on vacation, and they asked me to do entertainment news. And then last week, Chet was on vacation. Chet Walker, who, along with Beth Adams, so ably does the morning show here Monday through Friday, they asked me to sit in and had I known, had I really thought about the fact that I would have to be on the air at 5 a.m. and what that meant in terms of getting up and not sleeping and then having to put in a 20-hour day at my regular job, I might have said no, but I said yes, and I had a great time. Beth was terrific, kept me on an even keel all week, so it was fun. Thank you, Mary. That's a very sweet thing to say. All right, now we're going to go back and talk about computer stuff with Bruno from Greece. Welcome, Bruno. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
And by the way, happy birthday, Nick.
Thank you so much.
Okay. I purchased a modem card, which allows me to answer my phone while I'm online. But this modem card, it works sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't work. The screen comes up. It says phone call coming in. I click on it, and I pick up my phone, and I usually talk to people. Other times, I just get that busy sound that I'm hooked up to the modem.
Right, right.
What am I doing wrong?
Probably nothing.
Nothing.
What you may need first to check out the website of the manufacturer of that card and make sure you have the latest version of the driver.
I just installed it.
Okay, well, that doesn't. Yeah, it could have been sitting on the shelf for 8 months, right?
Oh, that's right.
and then in the meantime, they fixed a couple of problems in the driver.
Okay.
So download the latest version of the driver. The second thing is, often what happens is when we have lots of phones in our homes,
mm-hmm.
and particularly if we have lots of inexpensive, I'll call them, phones in our homes, we end up with a situation where they pull so much power out of the line that some devices can't recognize when a line has been picked up.
That's the ringer equivalence number.
Right. And so what happens is, you end up with, we had that problem with a guy who could not get online with his modem, could not get online, and we finally discovered there was a phone in his garage. We unplugged it and all his problems went away. He just had one too many phones on the line, and it was a cheap old phone out in the elements, et cetera, and it messed things up. So if you've got a lot of phones on the line, try unplugging a few and seeing if that solves the problem.
Okay.
If it does, I have nothing I can tell you except buy more expensive phones.
Okay.
Or move up to our fabulous Frontier DSL, which allows you to pick up a telephone call and high-speed internet at the same time.
I go to Florida, so I bring my computer to Florida with me, and I get online at net zero as well over there as I do in New York.
Right, right.
So I don't sense me getting the online. I thought of that, but the online only works in Rochester.
Right. Well, Frontier has phone numbers and service in many other states around the country.
Oh, really?
A lot of phone companies are like that now. They've been buying up other places, and right. you can split your time if Frontier services whatever area you go to in Florida. You can split your time with one company.
Right. So give them a call, 7777-WEB. We got to go. Take a quick break. Dan Deary, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, Nick Francesco, and you at 39 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
America's longest running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dan Deary.
I'm Steve Ray.
And we also have Rob Linton, who's very busy on the phones, because so many people are calling us to talk to us about computer problems. It's 44 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to Soundbites. Before we get back to those folks, let me talk about a new... Here's a surprise. Boy, I hope you're sitting down. Microsoft has confirmed yet another new Microsoft Word zero-day attack. A zero-day attack means all of a sudden there's a virus out there that nobody ever heard of, nobody's ever seen, nobody knows how to deal with. And bang, it's hitting us. And it's, again, a malicious attack exploiting a new undocumented flaw in Word. Now, this is Word 2000, so some of you will not be hit by this, which load backdoor Trojans on Windows machines. Now, this acknowledgement follows a warning from the antivirus vendor Symantec that the threat was detected in the wild, targeting Windows 2000, Windows 95, Windows 98, Windows ME, Windows NT, Windows Server 2003, and Windows XP systems. So those of you still running Windows 3.1 are pretty safe. The rest of you, you're pretty well doomed. Microsoft Security Response Team has investigated the report and concluded that the attack is limited to users of Word 2000. Now, we have not heard that from anybody but Microsoft at this moment. Secunia, who is a security alert company, rates the flaw as extremely critical. urges Word users to avoid opening Word documents from untrusted sources. Alternately, you can install OpenOffice.org for free and open whatever the heck you want whenever the heck you want to open it.
And also what we've talked about is trusted or untrusted sources don't matter. Someone you know can get a virus and send you the message, so it's sure. a trusted source.
Well, frankly, you to me, everybody's an untrusted source.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I just, because you don't know, because right, it's the virus that sends out the thing under your name. Let's say Dan gets a virus, which he, of course, would never do. Let's say Dan gets a virus. All of a sudden, I get an email that came from Dan. I could trace it back to Dan. But the point is, Dan didn't send it. The virus sent it. And that's where the problem lies. So you got to be real careful of what you open. If you're still using Word and you're still using the Microsoft Office suite, you got to be unbelievably careful. You know, people send me all these cutesy, oh, check this out. It's so cute. And look at this great picture. And look at this thing. I open them all on my Linux box. I don't open any email on my Windows box anymore, not ever. All right, our next caller is Bob from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
How you doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Pretty good. Happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you so much.
I have a Winbook laptop.
Yeah.
And it's got 3.1 on it right now.
Wow.
Well, there's no CD drive. All there is a 3.5-inch floppy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Luckily, you're safe from this latest. Okay, go ahead. Never mind. Go ahead.
Yeah. Where can I get either Windows 95 on 3.5-inch floppy or Linux on floppy so I can get a better operating system on there?
A swap meet? Maybe.
Yeah. Windows 95, you're not going to find. As far as Linux on floppy, does it have a USB port? Probably not.
No.
Yeah, that's a little tough.
A parallel hard drive. There were parallel zip drives.
There is a site, linuxlinks.com/distributions with a capital D,
right,
/ floppy with a capital F. That's www.linuxlinks.com/distributions with a capital D, floppy with a capital F, and that lists all of the distributions that are available on floppy disk of Linux, and there's a bunch of them. The good news is there's baskets full of them here.
Now, can you download Linux onto a 3.5-inch floppy?
Yeah, you can download Linux onto, if that's what it fits on, which these do, yes, absolutely. You just download these, stick them on your machine, and bang. Some of them are just rescue disk, but one is called MU Linux, and it's designed to be a small Linux distribution for old computers.
Oh, okay.
And so you can check that out and download them. Steve will have that link up on our site. It's already there. So go for it. I think it's a great use for old machines.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. How cool is that? Glad we were able to help him. Our next caller is Bill from Buffalo, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
Hey, gentlemen. Got a question for you. Want to upgrade memory in an HP Pavilion 220? It's currently got two slots with both of them having 256 in there. Mm-hmm. Now, do you have to take out both and replace both of them, or can you take out one 256 and put like a 512
in
there?
It depends on the motherboard. It would be listed in your manual.
Okay, because unfortunately, I don't have the manual. I wasn't sure if you got to replace them both with the same type or what the deal is.
You can probably find it on HP, HP's website.
Yeah,
and
they should have
memory specifications
right
about exactly what type of memory you can put in there and if they have to be matched pairs or not.
If you're going to upgrade memory, probably just do them both open, 512, and just replace them that way.
It's the easiest and safest. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes on Soundbites. 1180 WHAM.
We're ready for your calls at 222-1180. Long distance on the Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180 or star 1180. A free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
A good career.
These guys can answer your questions. Back to more Sound Bites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dan Deary.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 52 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. I got to tell you this quickly. Xerox, you know, you think to yourself, but here they are. Look at this. Xerox has lifted the veil on some of its research and development work in the field of printing. And this latest thing is expected to see the light of day within 18 months. It's transient documents, reusable paper. The content, what you print on the paper, automatically erases itself after a period of time and can be reprinted. This is inspired by the fact that lots of printouts have a lifespan, mostly of just a few hours. You print out something just to read it, or you proofread something on the way home or whatever. The specially prepared paper will preserve its content for up to 16 hours. Paper is a photochromic compound that changes from a clear state to a colored state under ultraviolet light, and it will fade away with time. The purplish printing can support up to 1,200 DPI printing resolution. I think this is a fascinating thing for Xerox to come up with. Now, of course, we all know about Xerox and PARC, the Palo Alto Research Center. They developed Ethernet. They developed laser printers. They developed the first personal computer. They developed the mouse. They developed a whole bunch of stuff.
That they never capitalized on.
That they never capitalized on. I hope they will capitalize on this. It's a pretty nifty idea.
It's kind of like reverse spy paper.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It starts out good and then it fades. You know, this message will self-destruct in 16 hours. Our next caller is, it's Patricia, and she wants to berate me for not having called her back. I love you, Patricia.
Hello, Nick.
Hi.
Happy birthday. I'm not singing and dancing over the phone, but I just had to call and wish you a happy birthday.
She does. She calls me up every year and sings and dances over the phone. And I absolve you of that this time around.
But I will maybe tomorrow do it to you at work.
Okay. And I will call you this week. My my 20-hour days are about over, so I'm back on something approaching my regular schedule, I hope, this week. So I will call you.
Anyway, happy birthday, dear.
Thank you, sweetheart.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, I hope you don't mind. I was just, chatting with my friends. You got a problem with that? I have friends, and they call me. Our next caller is Bob from Greece. Welcome, Bob.
Hi, gentlemen. How you doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Not too bad. I got a question here. I'm looking at this open office stack you talk about.
Sure.
And for the systems requirements, it lists about every Microsoft Windows thing from 98 through to present. My question is, my daughter's getting a laptop computer with Windows Media Center on it. Is that going to work or not?
Yep.
Okay.
OpenOffice will run on anything that the Microsoft Office suite will run on.
Okay. Also, is it possible to load XP over this Media Center, or should I just stick with Media Center? She's going to be like with email.
Well, Media Center is XP.
Oh, okay.
It just has some, it's just really tuned to do video and audio.
Yeah, recording TV shows, stuff like that.
Yeah, that generally come with TV cards so you can watch and record TV on your computer. It's got a music, a player, a full-screen music player built into it for watching music and whatnot.
Yeah.
So it is XP, just tuned to be a media center for TV and music.
But it does everything else XP does, so I wouldn't waste time deleting anything or reformatting anything or any of that stuff. Just go with it as it is. You're running XP.
You guys are the best. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much. We love to hear that. You'll notice I refrain from calling Bob honey or dear. I'll try to continue to do that as we go along. Our next caller is Tom from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Good morning, sir. I'm running Windows ME on my desktop.
Oh, good thing Dave's not here.
Yeah, okay, I know. The problem is, all of a sudden, I can't run a defrag on my machine. I've run the security tangle. Everything seems to come up okay, but the machine just will not defrag. And I keep getting the messages that the machine needs to be defragged and can't do it.
What do you mean you can't defrag it? What happens instead?
It'll run the defrag.
Oh, the 10 times starts. Yeah.
It'll go up to 6-8% at the most, and then it just
right.
It says system running, starting over again, something to that effect.
Run it in safe mode.
Yeah, there's some other program running, and you cannot run a defrag or a scan disk when there are other programs running.
Safe mode.
Right.
Yep.
All right. Well, I'll give it a try.
Yeah, give that a shot. That's the only thing that ought to work. There's also a way to run it. To off the command line, say run a defrag at the next boot, isn't there?
Yep, there is.
Scan disk space slash next boot, I think.
Yeah, so at a command line, if you type scan disk space, the forward slash, which is the divide by key under the question mark, And then next boot,
or scan,
all one
scan
word.
Now or scan next, I think it
scan
is.
Scan now?
He's doing defrag, though, so it would be defrag.
Defrag now.
Right.
Something like that. Yeah. We'll find it.
We'll find it, and we'll look. I'm running Linux on this machine, so I can't look it up, but we'll look it up and let you know. On to our next caller, who is Ryan from Honey Eye Falls. Welcome, Ryan. What's your question?
It's actually Brian.
Brian.
With a B. Hey, Nick, nice to hear you on the radio all morning.
Thank you so much.
This week, it was a pleasure, and I'm also glad Chet's not filling in for you on this show.
Yeah! Chet's a geek. He is. He's a complete, except he's a Mac geek. He'd have to fill in for Dave.
Well, he's a Mac geek and a Star Trek geek.
Yes, yeah, so we could really fill in for Steve.
Right. Hey, I got a wireless question. We've got a wireless router in one corner of our house that's been there for quite a while, works really well. We put an addition on the house, and I managed to commandeer some space in the basement to put a desk for myself, and the signal's terrible.
Yeah.
And we're using DSL. What
basements are especially bad because of all the steel I-beams that you typically have holding up the rest of the house.
Right.
Anything metal will block the wireless signal.
You can get extended antennas to hook onto your router that will give you more coverage. You can either do that or get a repeater for the wireless, and it'll bounce the signal further into your house if you can't receive it.
They also make devices where you plug a cable from the router into the jack in the wall, the phone, the power jack, and then you put another thing in the power jack in the basement and run that up, so you're now running Ethernet over your power link. So there are choices that are available. The easiest and probably best route is the extender. Is the range extenders that you can buy pretty much everywhere. Make sure you match the model of your router with your extender. We're going to take a break. Rob Jason's in with the news. We have Dan Deary, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on Soundbites.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180, the Choice 1 toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180, or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dan Deary.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Sound Bites. Now, before we get back to the phones, if you're on the line, please hang on. If you're not on the line, why not? You should be giving us a call. Before we get back to the phones, I want to talk a little bit about what goes on at our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Every week, we do a poll. Last week was about Firefox version 2. It's in beta now. So we had a poll about that. 331 of you voted, making it number 107 on the all-time hit list. Thank you very much. The choices were can't wait, yawn, and no thank you, i.e. forever. Can't wait was far in the lead with 66% of the votes, followed by 27% who think it's kind of a yawn, and a misguided 22 of you said no thank you, i.e. forever. This week's poll is about a very interesting thing that happened yesterday. Amazon has opened their own video download store. It's called Unbox, UNBOX. The Unbox video store lets U.S. users buy or rent TV shows, movies, and other video content from the internet. They're offering thousands of DVD-quality videos from over 30 movie and TV studios, which can be stored on up to two PCs and two portable video players at once.
But not DVDs.
When a user, when a user downloads a movie or a show, Unbox automatically sends a second download file optimized for Windows Media compatible portable devices. The service will compete with similar video download stores such as iTunes from Apple Computer and is a direct threat to traditional DVD services from companies like Blockbuster and Netflix. It seems to be $2 for a TV show, and between $8 and $15 for most movies. Rentals for a movie is $4. Videos can be sent as a gift. If you're a Mac user or a Linux user, you cannot shop at Unbox. It only works on Microsoft Windows XP. You can't even use it with older PCs because it's It's hard to meet the Unbox's hardware requirements. You need a 1.5 gigahertz processor, half a gig of RAM, and a DirectX-compliant video card with 64 megabytes of RAM and an internet connection capable of sustained 800 kbps data transfer rates.
And lots of hard drive space, probably.
And acres of hard drive space. They're going to have all 79 episodes of the original Star Trek series, including the original pilot. Movies will be Failure to Launch, Walk the Line, V is for Vendetta, Ben-Hur, the original Poseidon Adventure. And some of the major studios that have signed up with them are Universal, Sony, and Warner Brothers. So it's going to be a fairly big deal. So our question to you was, Amazon's video download store thrills me to no end, kind of interests me. Does it work on a Mac, and can I play them on Linux? And, of course, so far, we have had 63 votes. 37% of you are kind of interested. 27% of you are Linux fans. 19%, it thrills them no end. And 17% want to know if it works on a Mac. One of the interesting things is there's already a review out there by a guy named Tom Merritt who says it's interesting. It spends a lot of time phoning home. Now, even when you go to uninstall it, it wants to phone home, log in, and decide what to do. So it may not be the thing you want to get for your system at all.
There are several other services that have already popped out. One of them I've been playing with is Guba, or Juba, G-U-B-A, not quite sure how to pronounce it yet.
Right.
It's more of a rental service, which is the big issue with movie downloads. You're going to download a low-quality computer-based movie for $20, or you're going to go buy the DVD for $20 and have all the extras too. Yeah, in high quality. So the Guba service lets you watch movies for 99 cents and TV shows for 49 cents, which is kind of neat. So they're more competing with the rental services. But it does work on Mac and Linux because the movies are available in Flash and QuickTime as well as Windows Media Format.
Nice.
So that it's platform agnostic.
Right.
But the biggest thing that we're hearing in the news is that Amazon got the jump on Apple because Apple is having a big announcement next Tuesday. And all the speculation is that Apple is teaming with at least Disney and maybe some of the other studios for high quality full length feature movie downloads through the iTunes Music Store. And it expanding upon the TV and music videos that you can already download from Apple, the big sticking point that we're hearing is that Apple wants a single price, and they don't want a range of prices for the movies. So like right now they have a single price for music and a single price for TV shows, and the studios have all wanted a range of prices depending on what type of movie it is. So next Tuesday we'll find out what Apple has got up their sleeves. And since Apple already has agreements with most of the studios for TV shows, it makes a lot of sense that they'll be able to do similar things for video as well.
Should be interesting. We'll keep an eye on all of that for you. Our next caller is Jerry from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jerry. What's your question?
Hi. I would like to give some advice to the lady who called in approximately an hour ago, I guess, around there, that she couldn't turn the computer off.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Ingrid, yes.
And she has a Dell, okay. Well, what you do is you need a good spyware software, Spy Sweeper and eWidow.
There you go.
Well, remove that problem. And if she needs to, if she can approximate when this had occurred, she can restore on Dell, restore to an earlier date around there before it even occurred. Because I had the same problem, had to turn the thing off, and I came out of it smelling like a rose.
There you go.
Okay.
Thank you,
so,
Jerry.
Spy Sweeper and eWidow removed it. The SpyBotSearch.com did nothing. Okay?
Right. How cool is that? Well, thank you. I've been meaning to look at eWidow. It's on my list of things to look at to add it to the Security Tango, but I haven't done so yet.
It's a good program.
Yeah, I keep hearing good things about it. I just haven't had time.
Yeah.
But yeah, we find that a lot. One thing you might want to, thank you, Ingrid. One thing you might want to, Jerry, one thing you might want to think about, however, is that often enough, these things can hide in your restore area, depending on what you get. So that's one of the reasons in the Security Tango, we have people turn off the restore, because sometimes when you do a restore, that virus is lurking in there waiting to re-hit. So that's something to be very careful of at some point in the future. You know, I want to go back for just a second to this loading download store business. How big a market is there? Now, I suppose, you know, for music, it's one thing. You stick the music on your player and you wander around with it and you couldn't be happier. I get that. For video, on the other hand, you're either looking at it on this tiny little screen.
2-inch screen.
Or, and the same thing with phones. You can download TV shows to your phone now. Who wants to sit? It's ridiculous. Well, or do you want to sit in front of your computer all day watching the television shows?
Some of it I found, because I do have a video iPod and I watch video on it. A lot of the video I watch are podcasts. I watch the NASA video podcast, so you know the shuttle's on orbit now. So they, you know, every day they upload something, and it's while you're waiting in line for something, while you're sitting in the car, you know, in the traffic jam, or while you're waiting in line for something.
Right, but that's not an hour long show or even a half hour show. That's a snippet, a 5 minute, a 10 minute, maybe a 15 minute at most.
Yeah,
one of the Macworld magazine just did a podcast on the rumor, you know, podcast on the rumors, which is kind of interesting.
You're right.
What's going to happen? And that was the big point they made up. Are you going to spend that much money for a low quality video that you're going to watch on your computer a couple of times, or are you going to buy the DVD? And one of the counterpoints is young kids. You know, young kids will wear out a DVD playing it over and over and over and over again. And sometimes it's nice to put them on the computer in the other room while you're watching the TV yourself, so that you don't have to have so many different media setups. Because
a lot
of people
are
using
their... Yeah, but
even so,
I don't think they're going to do the same. Little tiny kids, yes. They'll sit there and watch, you know, Barney Saves the World 700-800 times in a row. I get that. But once they get old enough that you're going to give them an iPod or some sort of music player or a cell phone, they don't watch the same thing 200-400 times.
Yeah.
Maybe a music video, but at that point, you're not watching the video anyway. You're listening to it.
Right.
But for, you know, the TV shows and the movies, when are you going to find the time?
Right, right.
Some of it is also, what we've seen with the iPod, is the portability of it. And the rumor going along with Apple's video, you know, store is that they're going to release a real video iPod with a full screen rather than the 2-inch screen. And the portability. You download a show, you get together with your friends and plug it into a TV and watch it there.
Right. Right, I suppose. But
so
still,
one of
yes,
the jokes,
for the video iPod.
Yeah, one of the old jokes about the baby pictures in your wallet, the little accordion thing flying out of your wallet with hundreds of baby pictures. Mm-hmm. Well, now you can put thousands of baby pictures on your iPod.
See, that makes sense.
Yeah,
that...
but now you come to the point my wife always makes: how do you share them with your grandparents?
Well, they have their computer now.
Yeah, but they want to be able to take it and show it to their friends at lunch and all that other stuff.
Right.
They're not going to lug a video iPod around. They want paper. So it's we're not yet to the point where society is going to be saying, well, let's all grab a handful of video iPods and head out for the day. You know, it's just not going to happen. And the quality isn't that good. When you show off your grandkids, you show off a photograph because they look great in a photograph. On a video iPod, I don't care, you know, how good the original picture was. It just doesn't look that good, particularly to older eyes, thank you very much, on that little screen. You know, and so I think that and anybody who really knows music knows that the music sounds tinny and crappy on those phones and little things. Now, a video iPod is different. You get the headphones. The iPod is different. You get the headphones. You get a pretty decent range of sound.
And one of the first things most people buy is better headphones.
Well, yeah.
Yeah,
those little buds, they're bad for you to begin with. You know, anything that you stick in your ear like that and then crank up is just going to ruin your hearing over the years. But I don't think the devices are here yet. I just really don't. They're not light enough. They're not big enough. They're not.
And that's one thing Steve Jobs from Apple has said, that every time they have some big announcement, one of the ironies is Apple stock prices go down because the analysts' favorite rumor didn't get released, so the analyst drops the stock price.
Right.
But Jobs has said that for years before they even came out with the right now it's the iPod with video. Is the official name, that the screens are too small and the content isn't there and the licensing requirements. And maybe we're getting closer. And they've shown that with TV shows, millions of people buying TV shows off of the iTunes Music Store. And you know, the backstory on that, the irony that you can buy a TV show on DVD by the end of the season, buy the whole DVD, high quality, behind the scenes, extra footage, commentary, or you can buy the show you missed last night because you forgot to set your VCR.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what, I'd probably be more interested in being able to download the behind-the-scenes blooper reels and commentary than I would in most of the shows. You know, that's the stuff I find interesting.
Sure.
I listen to, and my wife listens to, a lot of old-time radio, and of course, for that, an MP3 player is perfect. You just pop that stuff on the MP3 player, wander around, and listen to your heart's content while you're doing
and
other
stuff.
And
that's mostly what podcasting has sort of become.
Right.
It's old-time radio.
Right.
You come up with serial, your serial novels, you know, science fiction stories. I listen to a great podcast called Escape Pod for sci-fi stories.
Right. But the problem is, with video, you really can't be doing something else.
Yeah, it's hard to watch the movie while you're driving to work.
Well, yes, and also I suspect illegal. I don't know that, but I suspect it is. Whereas while you can't, it's also, I believe, illegal to wear headphones while you're driving.
Yes.
You can plug your iPod or MP3 player of whatever ilk into anything you want. You know, speakers, there's a lot of them. You can plug them right into the radio or whatever. You can plug them into those things that fit in the cassette player. But video, what are you going to do? No, I don't see it as viable yet. We're going to take a quick break. While you all call in and tell me how stupid and wrong I am. We have Dan Deary, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
We're not sure what Sean Hannity knows about computers. But then again, we're not sure what the Soundbites boys know about anything but computers. Catch Sean Hannity later today on Wham! Now, back to Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dan Deary.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, it's a beautiful 59 degrees and fluffy skies in Rochester, New York. Fluffy. There's clouds. There's sun. It's fluffy. Is it partly cloudy or partly sunny?
You know, I'm not a meteorologist. I don't even pretend to be one. You know what I'm saying? But that is not fluffy. That's more like gross is what it is out there.
No, it's fluffy.
It's not big,
fluffy clouds, nice blue sky.
Look at it. It's gorgeous. It's a picture day out there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe it's just the pollution.
You're looking at a building. That's all
see. My bad, yeah.
Where you are. Those are windows, not clouds.
Yeah, well, let them know to clean the windows. I'm sorry. Yes, it is really nice out there.
You can't even see through all the accumulated coal soot on the windows from in between shoveling the coal in there. Before we get on to the next story, one last thing. We're about iPods and podcasting and stuff like that. I can see short things.
Yeah.
Trailers.
Movie trailers.
That's sort of fair. I can see, because one of the things we're struggling with right now is podcasting for faculty members in the College of Business. Interesting things they're doing, stuff like that. And I can't see doing a lot more than 5 to 10 minutes at a shot. Something you can listen to on the ride in or the ride home or catch in between a class or whatever. And you know, it's not long. It's not involved. You don't have to commit hours of time to it. That's sort of fair.
Sure.
All right. Windows Vista has a built-in security feature that will prevent access to the core operating system. Security software may be a thing of the past when the new version of Windows hits the stores early next year. Programs, including Microsoft's own, will not be given the privilege to write data just anywhere on the computer as they do with XP. The new Internet Explorer can't write to the main areas of the file system. It can't overwrite Windows. So if you visit a website, you don't have to worry that a keystroke logger or a rootkit or some of those things you hear about are going to get into the system. Microsoft is certainly making it more difficult for the independent security vendors right now. They're essentially trying to take control of the security user interface functions. Microsoft's closing off parts of the operating system to security software vendors. And at the same time they're doing that, they've also released their own security product, known as OneCare. How interesting is that? So we'll see what that has to bring. I got to say that preventing access to the core OS is one of the key ways you keep your system safe. For example, I run Linux. Steve runs the Mac OS. In both of them, you don't have access to certain areas of the operating system without special passwords or whatever, or a different username or whatever that happens to be. What that lets you do is, for example, and in Windows, you can do the same thing, but of course nobody does. Windows comes with automatically setting you up as an administrator.
Exactly. Everybody just skips over that part.
Exactly.
No password.
If you have one person as the administrator, and then you normally run every day, you yourself, as just a user, a plain user, a lot of the problems that you have go away because you are not allowed to write to certain areas of the system. Now, in Windows, there are easy ways to get around that, and that's one of the things they're going to try to protect people from in Vista. But the reality is, for example, on my Linux box, even if I got a virus, the most it could do is wipe out my data. It can't wipe out the hard drive. It can't wipe out the operating system because I have no authority to go in and do anything with those. So that's one of the things that makes other operating systems so much more secure. Now, Vista is looking to fix that, but they're looking to do it in a way that prevents other companies from getting involved in the process of selling stuff for Microsoft. It's just... it looks like yet another way for Microsoft to own the world.
And they also have to somehow maintain backward compatibility. You know, if Microsoft releases a new OS and none of your old software works, that's horrible.
Sure.
And well, yes
Apple's
and no.
Done that, Apple's done that three times.
Three times.
They've either gone to completely different processors or completely different hardware, and all your old stuff has worked. So Apple has been pretty good at that.
Right, right, right. But yeah, the thing is that you really... I don't know. I think that the reality is that XP works fine. You know, I'm sorry. If you could get the security updates for XP, people would never move on. But that's not, you know, Microsoft doesn't make any money if we do that. So I understand their problem.
Let's just stop making money.
Yeah.
The shareholders won't mind.
The shareholders won't mind. Well, that's the problem. The people who run the company are the shareholders. And it's been 5 years since they've had a new operating system. So,
And a reason for someone to spend $129.
Point, isn't it? They don't make any money on people just fixing what they've already got that works perfectly well. They only make money when new stuff is being bought. So,
remember the mess about the Windows maintenance licenses that a lot of big companies paid a fortune up front so they could get free Windows updates for the next 5 years?
Yep.
Well, that's come and gone, and there have been no Windows updates.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And now Vista comes out after all of those have expired. There are some very porked off people out there. And Microsoft is getting an earful from a lot of companies about that. I don't know that they'll care or do anything, but they're hearing about it. All right, our next caller is Dave from Ontario, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Hey, Nick, guys. My computer is continually churning. And by churning, I mean my hard drive light doesn't go out. And it doesn't matter if I reboot and start all out. As soon as I start running or doing anything, I just get this continual, when you can hear your hard drive being accessed.
Mm-hmm.
My hard drive light doesn't go out.
Right.
When I go to shut down, it locks up a little bit, and eventually it does go down. When I go to processes under Windows Task Manager, basically it shows me 97, 98 system idle process CPU usage.
Did you run this Security Tango yet?
Yeah, I've run it many, many times, and it comes up with nothing. I mean,
what operating system are you running?
XP.
How much memory do you have?
About 2.5 gigs, something in there.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Swap file's too big.
What's too big?
Swap file.
Yeah, the Windows has a swap file where it creates a duplicate copy of your memory on the hard drive so that it can swap programs in and out of memory. It's a way for the system to overcome low memory situations.
Okay.
However, it doesn't turn that swap file off when you have a lot of memory.
Okay, well now, I mean, I'm doing nothing now. I have nothing open other than my Windows Task Manager just to watch the window, and the thing's just churning away.
How many other processes are running?
Yeah,
you may have to...
Really nothing. It's 99% CPU usage to system idle process. And the only other thing, Task Manager, like if I click the mouse, Task Manager will take 1 or 2%.
What process is using it all?
It doesn't tell
system
me.
Idle.
System idle.
The
yeah.
system idle is.
Well, that's the way computers are anyway. They spend 99% of their time waiting for you to do something.
Yeah.
But right.
Because
right.
it's you know, it can do millions of operations per second.
It could be a bad hard drive too.
What about file sharing? No, background defrag.
Do you have something that will show you? Yes, you do. If you go to one of the other tabs, you can see what your network traffic is.
Mm-hmm. Well, looking at networking, it's nothing.
Nothing.
Users, just me. Applications, nothing. and, you know, this just started doing this a couple of weeks ago, and I can't really think that I did anything special in the last couple of weeks. It's just I thought I got a virus or something, so that's why I ran the Tango a couple of times. And, you know, I get my usual with AdWatcher or whatever.
I'll get
a couple of things that I always get, and I just delete them and go on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, I don't know. It's weird. Well, now it's stopped. It's crazy. Like, if I, you know, I leave my computer on overnight, too, and when I come down in the morning, it won't be doing it. Whoop, just started again, all on its own without me touching it. So I have never noticed that before, and I've had, you know, been building my own computers and running them since about 1988.
Yeah. Something is clearly not wrong. Something is clearly wrong, but as to what it might be, have you looked to see what the logs are telling you, the access logs, the error logs?
No.
Yeah, check those. Dan could be right. It could easily be a hardware problem.
That would be
if there's a problem with the hard drive and it's automatically rewriting stuff to try to save it.
Yeah.
Well, I've got two hard drives. I've got a SATA drive and an I drive, and those have been, I've had them for a while. So I mean, nothing's changed there, but I guess something could be wrong.
Well, drives, stuff dies, you know.
Oh yeah, but I mean, my SATA drive is fairly new, and the other one's probably a year old. But
you can download hard disk checkers, and just it'll check all the sectors and.
Well, that's what I'm looking
all
for.
The heads?
Something to check. I mean, what the heck is this computer doing? That's what I want to know.
Well, ScanDisk will do that.
Yeah.
From
CheckDisk in XP.
Yeah.
We'll do that, and you can, right from the command line.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I've used that.
CHKDSK/R, and then
isn't there some place? And I remember with Windows 98, there used to be some place you could go that would tell you what files have been modified in the last whatever. You tell it how long, and it'll
tell
you.
Well, you do a find. You just go to search and do date modified is and put in your criteria.
Okay, yeah, okay. I could do it that way. All right. All right, well, that helps. I'll start searching around and see what the heck is changing.
In the meantime, make sure every document you've ever created is backed up twice.
Yeah. Yeah, like my financial stuff. That
just in case that drive goes.
Definitely.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, guys.
Sure.
Sure.
Bye now.
Good luck. But it's tough when, you know, some things you can only really fix sitting at the machine.
Mm-hmm.
My suggestion is if you can't figure it out, take it to somebody and have them take a look. Our next caller is Chris from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen, and happy birthday, Nick.
Thank you so much.
I've got a question about drive imaging software.
Sure.
Norton Ghost 10 seems to have suffered the same fate as many Symantec products. It's bloated now. The old versions, you used to be able to...
Right, when Symantec buys them, they make them worse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You used to be able to put a floppy in, like on Ghost 8, create a drive image, exact bootable image on an external disk or even over the network, etc.
Yep.
It appears that in Ghost 10, that's gone.
It does appear that way, doesn't it?
You have to load the 80 megabyte application, and it does a backup with Windows running, which I've never been a big fan of.
Right.
Do you guys have any recommendations on a simpler drive imaging package that you could use to back up multiple hard drives to one external drive, for instance?
Well, there's a lot of different backup programs, but Norton Ghost isn't really a backup program. It's an imaging cloning program.
Yeah.
Backup programs like Retrospect and Backup Exec,
NovaStore,
they're more designed for backing up file by file than the next time you run it, it just backs up your changed files.
Yeah.
For disk cloning, it usually takes a very long time to clone an entire disk, and it's not something commonly done for backup.
There's a Acronis True Image, 9.0 is the latest. And that's a disk imaging program.
Yeah, I have seen some things written about that. That's supposedly a decent program.
Yep.
There's also another one called Active Disk Image that I've gotten some feedback on that people say is halfway decent. So
right, there's Acronis. There's a company. There's a product called Drive Backup.
Drive Snapshot.
Norton Ghost, Exact Image, R Drive Image, 7Tools Partition Imager, Image for Windows, DFC, Active Disk Image, Mr. Mirror.
So there's a lot of them.
Really, Acronis is considered to be the best, even better than Norton. Followed by Drive Backup. Those are supposed to be the top three. Acronis, Drive Backup, then Norton Ghost.
Okay.
And Acronis is actually $49.99, at the lowest price I can find it on the net at the moment.
Yeah, Ghost, I just kind of scared me. I hadn't used version 10, so I loaded it on and looked at it. And I go, you know, they supposedly made this simpler, but it seems more complex.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Acronis will also do, by the way, Linux and NetWare.
Oh, okay. All right, I'll take a look at those.
There you go.
Okay, thanks, gentlemen. Sure. Have a good day.
Have fun. Yeah, it is kind of tough to find the right product. And again, as you guys said, it's not designed to be a backup solution. It's designed to be a disaster recovery solution. Mm-hmm. I make an exact image of my hard drive, and that way, if the whole hard drive dies and I put a new one in, I can do this restore from Acronis or whatever, and I end up with what I had the last time I backed up. It's not my documents.
Nope.
I've changed things since then, but it's all my programs and everything else, and that's what that's for. So really, if you're going to keep your machine as safe as possible, then you want a combination of the stuff by the stuff that backs up your documents, and then the stuff that images your hard drive.
And usually the only time I ran Norton Ghost or similar products was when I was copying from one drive to another.
Yeah.
Someone wants to buy a bigger drive, you want all their stuff over to the other drive.
Or if a drive failed and it still wasn't too bad, where data was still there, you can usually clone it to a brand new drive and have everything.
Right, and we do a lot of imaging of our entire lab setups.
Yeah, you want one computer identical to 50 other ones next to it.
Right, and that Ghost, the Ghost type.
There's network versions of that too, to push a clone over the network.
Exactly.
Yeah, Acronis has one.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dan Deary, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. At 39 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Stand. It's Soundbites, America's longest-running computer show on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Once again, here's Nick Francesco.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dan Deary.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites, 58 degrees in somewhat bluish
actually,
skies.
Nick, you want to know what those calls were that you were, you know, saying that I dumped?
No.
They were people calling and correcting us on the proper terminology for the clouds that are out there.
Oh, were they?
Okay. This is a
cumulus,
computer show.
Nimbus, stratocumulus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever works. You know
Fluffy.
What I'm saying? Huh?
Fluffy. Fluffy.
No. I can't tell. I'm sorry. It's, you know.
They're fluffy. It's a pretty fluffy day.
Why don't you give
up the bunny. There's a little chicky.
Shady pines, Nick. Shady pines. You know what I'm saying?
There's the ecstasy of St. Teresa. What?
Hey, why don't you give out the phone numbers to remind people?
You know what? We're at 222-1180 if you're in the 585 area code. If you're outside the 585 area code, it's 800-295-1180 on the Choice One toll-free line. And, of course, all you Verizon Wireless customers, it's a simple *1180 for calling in now. Money bots. You know what a bot is? A zombie? It's a computer that's been taken over by some other piece of software and therefore starts sending out spam and stuff. If you get a network of those together, they're called botnets. Botnet hunters have tracked down the latest worm attack that one malicious hacker. See, we're in the wrong business. One guy is earning $430 a day by installing spyware programs on thousands of Jeez. Commandeered Windows machines. Security researchers discovered a direct link between the botnet building attack and a company called Dollar Revenue, a company that pays between 1 penny and 30 cents per installation of its heavily criticized ad-serving software. Within 24 hours, the botnet hijacked more than 7,700 machines via the Windows Server Service vulnerability that we've been talking about, and hosed the infected machines with the noxious Dollar Revenue files. During a four-day stretch, Researchers counted 9,700 infections from a single command and control center and calculated the attacker was making hundreds of dollars a day in commissions from dollar revenue alone. This guy seems to be earning more than $430 a day, and that's not the only piece of adware he's installing.
Well, one of the responses from the company, advertising company, because you know advertising is a legitimate business.
Yep.
In most cases, they're saying that these crackers are violating their terms of service because they're supposed to install this on websites one at a time. They're not supposed to use bots, and it's specifically against the terms to use bots.
Yeah.
Right.
Interestingly, is that the payouts vary according to location. An adware installation in China only pays a penny, while an adware loaded onto a PC in the U.S. or Canada pays between 20 and 30 cents. All right, we're back to the phones. Our next caller will be Adam from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Adam. What's your question?
Nick. Hey,
Adam.
I just got a quick question about tax preparation software.
Yes.
For fiscal year 2005, I wanted to know if it was still available for those of us that filed for an extension and haven't gotten around to doing it yet and like to do it ourselves. I didn't know if that software was still available.
Something you'd have to ask the company, yeah. The two biggest ones are Quicken's and
Intuit,
yeah, and TurboTax.
Yeah. Right.
Have you been on their websites?
No, not yet.
Yeah, I would suggest take a quick look at their websites, Intuit.com.
Right.
And check to see what's available for QuickBooks. Usually you can get it. You just have to do a little bit of work in terms of making contact with them to get the old stuff. For example, TurboTax Deluxe 2005 is still available for $40.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay. It's likely not available... probably still is available in stores because we haven't completed the 2006
right, but
fiscal year yet.
You can get it as a download from them or under CD-ROM, Intuit.com, Intuit.com.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Sure.
Have
fun. All right, our next caller is Bob from Victor, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, I have Windows 98. Spyware and virus protection software can I buy for that currently?
Pretty much none. All of them require something newer than that. Luckily, though, you can go to the securitytango.com website and download free software. You often, though, have to look for older versions that will still work with an operating system that old. AVG, antivirus, LavaSoft's Adaware.
Mm-hmm.
Just make sure you check the system requirements of the download button that you're getting the right version for your OS.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dan Deary, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
4 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dan Deary.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Our next caller is John from Penfield, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Hi, Nick, and happy birthday.
Thank you so much.
I've got a compact Presario 2700 laptop and running XP Home Service Pack 2. I've got it set up on a Linksys wireless network, you know, and I did that with the, you know, I have that little card that I insert into the side
sure.
of the computer.
Mm-hmm.
Normally at night, I go into hibernation. I put my machine into hibernation. In the morning when I bring it out of hibernation, about 50% of the time or more, it fails to recognize that card is in there.
Yeah,
a lot of hardware, cards, external peripherals can't operate under hibernation.
Yeah. The easiest thing, just shut it down instead of putting it into hibernation.
Okay, so that's...
It takes another minute or two to boot up, but you always know everything's going to work.
Oh, okay.
You know, boot it up, go get a cup of coffee. By the time you come back, you're done.
Okay, so that's a normal thing to
yeah,
happen.
Yeah, I'm afraid yep. it is.
Okay.
Yep.
Also, I was listening to talk about Acronius.
Yeah.
I use that also, and that does have a file backup feature in it.
Cool.
Oh, cool.
So you can do both.
Cool. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you for your help.
I love to hear that. Thank you so much. I love it when our callers call in and help us out. Our next caller is Dan from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dan. What's your question?
I have a Compaq Presario laptop, and kind of late for me to get the backup feature or ghosting feature because the hard drive is dead.
Oh, yeah.
So I replaced it with a new one, but I want all the data off of it. I was about 8 years old. I'm wondering if there's any place local that can actually do the recovery of the data.
Why?
Just the disks are bad.
What a coincidence!
Funny you ask. At Enright PC, we've been quite successful with quite a few hard drive failures where we're able to get the data off of it. And burn it to CD, DVD, whatever you need, or write to new hard drive.
Okay. I like that. Whereabouts are you guys located?
We're on Empire Boulevard.
Okay. Cool.
70 Empire Boulevard.
Yeah, a lot of times it depends on how badly damaged or in what way the disk is damaged. We've had some pretty good luck with Mac repair disks as well. But we had one customer this week who lost 6 months of his brand new first baby's pictures.
Oh no!
So we had to send it off to a commercial recovery service. We use a big one in California called Drive Savers, and you look at about $1,000 minimum to recover a hard drive.
Yeah, that's just
it'd
a start.
It'd be well worth it. I'm looking at almost 6 years of research.
Yep.
And this is just a note of caution, everybody else. Back up!
Your hard drive will fail. You will lose data.
Right. It's not if, it's when. Exactly.
And it's usually a week before your deadline is due.
Exactly. Okay. Our next caller, having the same exact problem, will be Mike from Rochester. Welcome, Mike.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
Good. My question is, I used my laptop yesterday, powered it up like normal, went to go on the internet, clicked on it, came on, and all of a sudden the screen just started flipping. I couldn't stop it without powering it down, taking the plug out, and taking the battery out. And I tried it, rebooting again, same thing.
What browser?
Pardon?
Is it the whole computer or just a specific program?
Whole computer. The screen just flips continuously. You can't access anything because you're just flipping like a TV screen.
That may be a virus, but could also be simply a bad, something's gone wrong with the hardware somewhere.
Yeah, what we see a lot of times with laptops is that the video cables and power cables have to go through the hinge of the laptop to get from the bottom to the top. And over the years of opening and closing the lid, you wear out those cables.
And what I also see is a lot of people will pick them up by the screen and move them around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that'll do exactly the same thing. That'll screw it up bad.
Okay.
If you're lucky, the cable can be replaced easily. If you're not very lucky, it's a 4 or 5 hour job to tear it apart and replace the entire screen.
If you have an extra monitor, too, you can hook it up to that extra monitor to see if you get a picture on there. That way you can determine if it's the actual laptop screen causing the problem or if it's the video card.
That's an excellent idea. That's an excellent idea.
We've actually had a couple of laptops this week where people have turned them into desktops because the screen is broken now.
Yep-er.
Hang an external monitor on it, it's now a desktop.
Yep-er. All right, it looks like we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. I particularly want to thank those of you, and especially my friend Patricia, who called to wish me a happy birthday. I'm delighted to be 54 years old. And not every day is a triumph on this planet, and so I don't mind saying how old I am. I want to thank Dan. Thank you. Here it is now. We've slowed the whole show right back down to nothing. Thank you so much. I want to thank Dan Deary for sitting in so ably for Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray for, being Steve Ray. And I want to thank Rob Linton for not completely screwing up with everything that he did here today. I'm Nick Francesco. You're listening to Soundbite. See you next week on 1180 WHAM.